Hey everybody, Kevin Grossman, President of Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards. I want to tell you about the premier talent acquisition event of the year that's happening on November 2nd and 3rd in Dallas, Texas. It's the 2022 Candy Awards and TalentNet Live Conference. 1.5 days, jam-packed full of great sessions and speakers, including our keynote speaker, Leslie Maxey, who's a former Olympian and media personality, as well as Keith Sonderling, the EEOC commissioner. And you're also going to hear from talent acquisition leaders from Ford Motor Company, Alcon, Canyon Ranch, Microsoft, Uber, Applied Materials, Raytheon, Southwest, Salonese, New York Presbyterian Hospital, Inspire Brands, Virtusa, and so many more. So we hope to see you November 2nd and 3rd in Dallas, Texas. And you can learn more at candy-events.org. Enjoy the podcast.
The pandemic has really transformed the way everyone works, as we just discussed. But more importantly to this topic, it accelerated the rate at which employers are adopting AI to manage their workforce. And it's not just in talent acquisition. It's really throughout the job lifecycle, there's some sort of artificial intelligence or technology. So the question now for companies is not, oh, should we implement new HR technology? Should we implement this recruiting software? It's, we have to stay competitive, but how are we going to implement it? For what purpose? And how do we comply with the law?
You're listening to the Candy Shop Talk podcast, brought to you by Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards Benchmark Research, and hosted by Kevin W. Grossman. Talent Board is the first nonprofit research organization focused on elevating and promoting a quality candidate experience. Commissioner Sonderling, thank you so much for joining me on the Candy Shop Talk podcast. You are the current commissioner of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC as we know it. So before we dive into the rest of the show, tell us a little more about who you are and what you do today.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on your podcast and to talk about some of the issues that are really relevant to HR professionals and talent acquisitions. So for me, it is so important for me to talk to HR professionals, to talk to talent acquisitions, because all of you are on the front line of these issues. You know, coming from Washington, D.C. and being, quote, inside the beltway, you know, a lot of the discussions we have here are with attorneys, are with trade groups, but it's so important to get our message out. So a little bit about me before we dive into the substance. I was confirmed to be a commissioner on the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in September of 2020. Before that, I've been in government since 2017. I was at the U.S. Department of Labor. I was at the Wage and Hour Division, also very, very relevant to HR professionals with wage and hour laws, Family and Medical Leave Act. So I was doing that as a deputy administrator. I was the acting administrator for a little bit there. That was my first forte into government. Before that, I was a labor and employment lawyer in South Florida. So labor and employment is all I've ever done, both in the private sector, where as an attorney working with HR, both on the consulting and then in the litigation sphere, and now in the government. So I've seen both sides of it, and I'm really very passionate about this area, and especially now being commissioner at the EEOC, where our mission is to prevent and remedy unlawful employment discrimination and advance equal opportunity for all in the workplace. Not that much different than what HR professionals' missions are as well. So.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, not the, as I like to joke tongue in cheek sometimes, not the most glamorous part of recruiting and hiring and retaining, but it's super critical for organizations. A lot of the research that we do at Talent Board and around candidate experience is all about the perception of fairness and being fair. And it's a lot of what you focus on as well. So this is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk with you. So as you just mentioned, I mean, the EEOC investigates complaints of job discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, disability, age, genetic, I mean, the list goes on. If an employer is violating employment laws, your team takes action to stop this discrimination. And for those, I mean, most of the audience knows this already, but it's good just to repeat it again. So far in 2022, what have been the most prevalent types of job discrimination that your office is investigating?
Yeah, and you know, we have a very important mission. At our core, we're a civil law enforcement agency. So if an employee is discriminated against both in the application process, as talent acquisition knows, these laws apply to applicants as well, or at any point during their employment, they may have a claim at the EEOC to file a charge. So our fiscal year 21 numbers is the best indication of what the most recent trends were here at the EEOC, just the way we do our accounting. So overall, in fiscal year 2021, we received over 608,000 inquiries of potential discrimination.
Is that up or down?
That is around pretty typical of what we see. It's a little down, which I'll explain in a minute, but I need to explain what that actually means. That doesn't mean there's 600,000 charges of discrimination. That's just people either emailing, coming to our offices, or calling us about that. So we got 61,000 charges last year. So of those 608,000 inquiries, about 61,000 of those turned into actionable charges against employers. And that is down from the year before. The year before is around 67,000. So that number is down a little bit. So out of those 61,000 charges, the number one complaint we got at the EEOC was retaliation. Retaliation was the number one filed charge at the EEOC because often it's tagged on to other claims. So somebody may be discriminated against and then exercise their rights and then be retaliated against. So we consistently see that being the number one charge of discrimination. Taking that aside, the second most filed charge, which really was the most filed individual charge, was disability discrimination. And that was 37.2% of all charges. So disability discrimination continues to be a problem. And I know there's so much inclusivity now in the talent acquisition world is making sure that workers with disabilities have the same ability to apply. And we'll talk a little bit about artificial intelligence and how that's helping. But that's really one of the larger claims we see. That was followed by harassment. And then race discrimination, which is discrimination involving treating an applicant or employee unfavorably because of their race or personal characteristics also associated with race was fourth. Then fifth was sex, which is very broad. That could be pregnancy discrimination, gender discrimination, sexual harassment, and sexual orientation. That was fifth, followed by age discrimination, then national origin discrimination. Discrimination then based on color was eighth, and then religious discrimination was ninth, and then pay discrimination under the Equal Pay Act was 10th, and then the least amount of charges was under genetic information discrimination. So that's sort of the trends we're seeing pretty consistently every year, where retaliation is the number one charge, followed by disability discrimination.
Do you find, just as a brief aside to that is there any correlation or association between that list that you just said is what is driving another? So is, for example, we know somewhat in our research data that at least the candidates claiming that they've been discriminated against, this is not that they filed anything with the EEOC, but they tell us in our data that they feel, due to age, for example, that they feel discriminated against because of their age. And we've seen that theme kind of increasing. But is there anything that's driving retaliation, or is it just that's just across the board?
Meaning, I think it's across the board. It's not unique to the EEOC. As you know, the Department of Labor through OSHA, there's retaliation as well. The Family Medical Leave Act has retaliation. The National Labor Relations Board has retaliation. So generally, you know, we see these claims across the board in labor and employment because somebody complains and then something happens to them. And the condition of their employment changes from that. So it's really a larger effort. There's now a multi-agency effort to make sure that retaliation claims are going to start hopefully going down. We don't want to see employees being retaliated against. So the agencies are working together to put out more guidance for employers about the anti-retaliation provisions in these and for to allow employees to complain or exercise their rights without any fear of any employment action. That's just generally what we're seeing, but it's across the board.
So based on that list that you shared as well, with retaliation being the number one complaint, how has the pandemic continued to impact the volume and type of complaints that your office sees? Are there any trends there?
Yeah, and this was a question we were getting for a long time. And just by the way, you know, charges are filed, the amount of times employees have to file a claim with the EEOC, we didn't really see that statistics until recently, but we publicly gave our statistics out between April 2020, when the pandemic, you know, started going, through December 2021. So that frame, that snapshot there, we got around 6,225 COVID-related charges of discrimination. And about 66% of those charges, which is around 4,000, was related to ADA violations. And then there was 2,700 cases related to vaccination-related charges about mandatory vaccination policies when, you know, in 2021, when the employers were doing mandatory vaccination or there was potential looming government-required vaccination, we started seeing a lot of those claims coming in as well. A lot of those came under Title VII, which we assume were the religious accommodations for the vaccinations. But looking just at our fiscal year of 2021, it was around 3,631 COVID-related charges of that 61,000. So we'll see that continue to increase as the years go on, as time allows employees to file their charges, and then we'll be able to update our data. But we did file 3 COVID-related lawsuits in 2020, one as well. So in 2021, there's about 3,600 COVID-related charges and 3 lawsuits. And those lawsuits really dealt with Americans with Disabilities Act and those reasonable accommodations for workers with disabilities.
Well, and I think it goes without saying that we're going to continue to see the fallout from the impact of a world that we've never been in before today. Even we all want to believe that we're done with COVID, but we're not. And now you've got, again, I don't want to digress too much, but you've got employers that are requiring employees to come back to the office. And I think that I'm sure that there's going to be some complaints that come out of that. I want to segue a little bit though, and continue one more question about the kind of the COVID impact. And what has the EEOC done to ensure that job applicants and employees know their rights during COVID? And employers know their obligations during this continuing difficult time, because again, we want to believe it's done and it's not.
Yeah, and this is so important. And the EEOC, in my opinion, was a model agency for making tough decisions about COVID and giving employees all the information they need to know about their employer's duties to them and their employer, for the employers to have information in easy to read question and answer format about what their rights are. And early on, you know, the public really needed this input. Everyone, it was very novel for everyone in HR. But the EEOC came out early and put out guidance, and it's available all on our website, EEOC.gov, from everything from disability-related inquiries and medical exams to confidentiality of medical information to hiring and onboarding to reasonable accommodations to preventing pandemic-related harassment due to national origin, race, or other protected characteristics. If you remember the beginning of the pandemic, that was occurring. Information about furloughs and layoffs, return to work information, age, caregiver and family responsibilities, pregnancy, long haul COVID now, and vaccinations. And, you know, for the EEOC has really had to adapt to whatever the biggest issue is for HR when it came to COVID. When COVID first happened, employers wanted to know, can they exclude their employees from the workplace if they have symptoms of COVID? Can they temperature check? Can they ask an employee to get a COVID test? Things that are so commonplace right now, we don't even think twice of. But before the pandemic, these were potentially violating the laws. So the EEOC came out very early and said, look, COVID is a direct threat under the Americans with Disability Act. That allowed employers to do things they normally weren't going to do. So if you remember early on, local health authorities were requiring employers to tell that one of their employees got COVID for their statistics. And before, there could have been confidentiality information. So we really gave that information very early on. And then look, what was next? Vaccines. Then we came out with guidance about vaccines and vaccines incentive, vaccines accommodations for religion, for disability. And then what was next? Long haul COVID. We put out guidance related to long haul COVID, and very similar to other issues, longer term issues like caregiver responsibilities in COVID and how that all intersects with our law. So it's all on our website. It's very detailed and easy to read question and answer format, and really for HR professionals and talent acquisitions who are recruiting during these difficult times about asking about vaccination status, things like that. We really have very detailed information on our website.
It's super important that everybody that's in recruiting and hiring and HR and talent acquisition keep themselves in the know of all of these things that have been, I mean, we've never been here where we're at today in this world, and it continues to be something that is changing dramatically, and I can't even imagine. And, you know, I run my organization's small, group team. We've always been virtual though. We've never been in the office. And so there's been, you know, things that have not impacted us directly versus companies that have both there. So I mean, again, make sure that you're in the know.
Right. Especially with telework and long-term return to work issues. What about employees who have anxiety about returning to work? What about employees that are fearful of the next disease? These are all very important issues that we discuss.
Well, we've seen them. What's happened, that they're leaving, they're gone. They're like, I'm going to another job. I'm not being here anymore. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation for another time. I want to jump to recruiting technologies and recruiting automation, especially what some call, and I've called, smart technologies or artificial intelligence.
A lot of different things to call it.
But, you know, the thing is that for the longest time, for companies of any hiring volume and scale, even smaller companies today, it's pretty common that you're going to have some some recruiting technology in at your organization. You're going to have a tech stack besides employee of record information that you're hosting. You have applicant tracking system. Maybe you have a CRM. I mean, the list goes on. And one of your highest priorities have been to ensure, because this, a lot of these tools are used in screening and selection of applicants and employees.
And that's a big place they're being sold. You're right.
And exactly. And I'm in the space. I've been in the space for over 23 years now, primarily on the technology side. And so, yes, I mean, I know all of that, but it is important, because while we're going to talk about this a little bit, while there are benefits, there are definitely some concerns that I know that one of your highest priorities are making sure that these technologies are deployed and designed and deployed consistently with longstanding civil rights laws, right? And it's true that more of the companies of any hiring volume and scale are implementing these technologies, as I've mentioned, on a regular basis. So what drove your interest in this area, and why is it a big deal for large employers and employees, but any organization.
Well, here's really, I think the pandemic has really transformed the way everyone works, as we just discussed. But more importantly to this topic, it accelerated the rate at which employers are adopting AI to manage their workforce. And it's not just in talent acquisition. It's really throughout the job lifecycle, there's some sort of artificial intelligence or technology. So the question now for companies is not, oh, should we implement new HR technology? Should we implement this recruiting software? We have to stay competitive, but how are we going to implement it? For what purpose? And how do we comply with the law? So just broadly, you know, AI, it writes job descriptions, it screens resumes, it chats with applicants, it conducts job interviews, it predicts if an employee will accept an offer, it helps you then decide what their salary should be, it identifies employees' current skills, tracks productivity, assesses workers, and there's even AI out that are managing employees and telling employees they're fired. So it's being used in all types of decisions once solely made by HR.
Across the employment journey.
Across the employment journey. And look, in some cases, completely eliminating bias by eliminating the person from it.
Most bias.
Most bias, some bias, most bias, any bias. We'll talk about some examples. But look, if it's poorly designed and it's carelessly implemented, it can also then discriminate on a scale and magnitude far greater than any individual HR professionals. And taking a step back, what is the reason for that? Because AI is only making predictions about applicants. It's only as sound as the training data on which the algorithms rely. So if an algorithm relies solely on the characteristics of a company's current workforce to model the ideal attributes of the ideal job applicant, it may unintentionally replicate the status quo. So if the current workforce is made up of one race, one gender, or one age group, the algorithm is going to screen out people who don't share those characteristics. And I think the most infamous example of that is one of these companies used a resume screening program, and they found the most likely predictors of success at that firm was being named Jared and having played high school lacrosse, because that was the key performance of some of their people, and which is not a great program to use when they're being sold to diversify workforce. So my awareness, raising awareness, especially in the talent acquisition side of things, where you know you're seeing a lot of these softwares being developed and deployed, is that it can really truly eliminate bias. It can really get qualified candidates past steps they were not able to get past before if it is properly designed. But on the flip side, if not, it can scale discrimination far wider than any one individual person. So that's sort of, it's out there, it's being used, and it's widely being implemented. And I really want to make sure that it's done consistent with our civil rights and gives job seekers the best opportunities, which the point of talent acquisition, which is what everyone in talent acquisition wants to do.
And it's important to note, for any given time, most applicants that are entered a job aren't getting the job. I mean, again, you run the numbers, there's got a very small percentage of people who actually get hired at the end of the day, which is another reason why it's super important to make sure that you're not overlooking individuals. I mean, we're humans. We aren't the best decision makers. Modern day neuroscience has shown that we're rife with bias. But if we don't train our technologies correctly, like you're just pointing out, it can exacerbate it exponentially, right? So, Commissioner, let me talk about back in October of 2021, the EEOC announced that it was launching an initiative focused on fairness and the use of AI, artificial intelligence, and algorithmic tools. What can you tell us about what that initiative is doing and how we can expect to, what can we expect to see out of it of the EEOC?
Yeah, before I get to that, I do want to just drive home one really important point you just made. about outside the realm of science fiction, AI doesn't have any motives or intentions of its own. It only has the algorithms to enable it to correlate data and make predictions. And according to industry experts, especially in the talent acquisition field, this is what it's making it so attractive for employers to buy, because its reliance on hard data creates the potential to eliminate that discrimination by removing the bias, right? And when it's designed in a clear and explainable way, it eliminates the biggest challenge to human resources, talent acquisition, and that's the human, right? And to your point, as HR professionals, talent acquisition, the reason the EEOC exists is employment decisions are vulnerable to bias on the part of hiring professionals. You know, there's so many studies out there. One of the most well-known one is hiring managers are more likely to favor male names over female names, even though their resumes are otherwise identical. Another study showed that African Americans and Asian Americans who, quote, whiten their resumes by deleting references to race receive more callbacks than identical applicants than those that included the racial references.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, a longstanding issue. And a lot of times that HR professionals don't become aware of the discriminatory conduct is too late. But like AI, especially in the recruiting side, can really help eliminate bias. For instance, an AI-enabled resume screening program can be taught to disregard variables that have no bearing on a job performance, such as an applicant's name. An applicant's name may signal correctly or incorrectly variables that have nothing to do with their ability to perform the job, like the applicant's sex, national origin, religion, or even race. And, you know, preventing a hiring manager from seeing that on the onset will prevent that sort of discrimination. Also, you know, more sophisticated AI recruiting programs like the ones that use voice recognition, natural language processing to get a transcript of the interview, or facial recognition can really prevent discrimination at the earliest stages. When somebody sees somebody, they see they're visibly pregnant. They see they're of a certain race, gender, or national origin. They see they're disabled.
Which is what you're going to see since the beginning of interview time, to see when you're interviewing in person, that you do see that. I mean, your bias does kick in, and that's a whole nother conversation about structured interviews versus unstructured, but.
Right, but at least this allows them to not see that, and that hiring manager in their heads doesn't have to say, well, this person has a disability. How much is it going to cost me to accommodate them? This person is pregnant. They may leave for their pregnancy leave, and it allows people to move forward past that stage when they would have been potentially eliminated before. So from a talent acquisition perspective, there's a lot of potential benefits there just to get the candidate past some of those historical barriers that they face. So you had asked about the EEOC's initiative. And so this is in October of 2021, EEOC formally announced an initiative on the use of AI in the workplace. This initiative is going to examine more closely how technology is fundamentally changing the way employment decisions are made. It aims to guide applicants, employees, employers, and technology vendors, really everyone involved in the process, from the employee all the way through the people actually developing this, how to use these programs fairly and consistent with our laws. We're going to establish an internal work group, launch a series of listening sessions. We've had one on disability, gather information in identifying promising practices, and issue some technical assistance, which we recently just did this in May, relating to the Americans with Disability Act and AI and its use, and making sure that people with disabilities have the reasonable accommodations and can be able to use these programs or have alternate ways to interview. Not much different than how ADA accommodations are dealt with in the hiring process for a long time, but now it's going digital and there are potentially more issues with people with disabilities. So we really put out some promising practices there about how employers and vendors can design and use these programs to make sure people with disabilities are not excluded because of their disability.
Absolutely, especially with the tremendous increase during the pandemic of virtual screening and interviewing, and the increased incidence of hiring remote workers in markets that you never would have thought about hiring before. So there's been some benefits too, besides what you're talking about in regards to how these technologies can help organizations not be overlooked marginalized groups and give an opportunity to more job applicants in positions today that maybe never would have been virtual before or remote and now are too, which is really great, which kind of actually makes sense. Everything that we've been talking about really does line up with, if companies have been doing this right with their technology stacks, with the smart technologies that they're implementing, and it's the right data that they're learning on, the learning algorithms, and to make sure to not overlook individuals, we see in our benchmark research that younger candidates, people of color, women in particular, all have shown this last year much higher, significantly higher, positive candidate experiences. I'm hoping that all these things are playing into that, right? Because I don't think that before we actually had not seen that. And does that surprise you at all? And why do you think that is the case? I mean, we've already outlined a bunch of reasons why.
Well, it surprises me in a good way. And I'm glad to hear that there's more positive experience. And I think we need to take a step back. And I think we really need to commend groups like yours and others for all the hard work you're doing to make sure that they are having a positive experience, to make sure that everyone is having an equal opportunity to join the workforce. And that's our agency's mission. And that's what we've been trying to do since the 1960s, since we were created, you know, from the civil rights movement. So I think a lot of that, yes, I think overall, it is surprising to see a group that has historically not had great experiences and been prohibited from entering the workforce, in some cases, obviously illegally, because of those protected characteristics. But it's because our issues in HR have now become big time issues. They've now become board level issues. They've become C-suite issues. And unfortunately, a lot of that came from the Me Too movement or some of the things we're seeing with pay equity. And it just becomes very big ticket stuff right now. And I think because of that bad publicity companies got post the Me Too movement and now everything with COVID, it's really put a spotlight on HR. It's really put a spotlight on talent acquisition and making sure that all candidates' experiences, whether you're applying all the way through the life cycle of your employment, that you have that, you know, positive recollection of that. So I'm really happy to see that, but I do think it has been a very concerted effort. I don't think it's random. I think it's been a very concerted effort of companies, of HR professionals, of really trying to make the workplace experience better from the very start, from the time you apply to a job all the way through your exit interview.
And the unfortunate social unrest that we had in 2020 and, you know, the death of George Floyd and a lot of the continued unfortunate violence in this country, especially that in the workplace. I mean, I think that there's so many things that business leaders are with their teams are trying to get right. So I think that there has been progress made of making a better opportunity and making, again, it more fair for most job applicants, which is exciting. What's one thing, speaking of business leaders and managers, and now that as we start to wrap up this podcast, what's one thing that you would emphasize to them that they should really focus on today to make sure that they are creating a positive, inclusive recruiting and hiring environment for all their job applicants?
Well, first and foremost, a shameless plug to the EEOC. We have a tremendous amount of documents on our website for you as talent acquisition professionals to make sure that you're complying with our laws and that you're having fair recruiting processes that are compliant with the law and that give, again, everyone equal opportunity. But for us and, you know, some of the promising practices that the EEOC has long identified is making sure that there's buy-in outside of HR, outside of talent acquisition, that the culture of inclusiveness, that the culture of equal opportunity starts at the very top of the company. And when you have, you know, your C-level or your owner or your president ingraining this in the company's values, it makes HR's job a lot easier. So, you know, we have a lot of very good guidance on that, on how to do that and how to make sure that recruiting is diverse and there's a large candidate pool. But again, it really starts with management allowing HR to properly be able to do this. And we have a lot of guidance on how HR professionals and talent acquisitions can get that buy-in.
Absolutely. That's great. So this has been a fantastic conversation, Commissioner Sonderling. And the way I like to wrap up my podcast is that we're always working all the time. Work, 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 work. Always working. So besides working, what else do you like to do?
Well, I have a 7-month-old son named Baron. He was my first child. And that is all I'm doing right now, other than working, spending time with my wife and my baby Baron and watching him grow. And so that is, I think you will allow me to have that response as an overall, that's my hobby and that's my life outside of work.
That's wonderful. Well, congratulations on being a new father. And I have two daughters, 11 and 13. And so have been on that journey for a while. And
you're on a different journey now.
Well, I am now because we're into teenage land now for one, but oldest at least. But they're good. They're good kids. And it is a blessing. And we're so grateful to have that experience. So again, congratulations. But yes, besides your work, that fills your world. all in between. Is there sleep? That's my question.
Yes, he's a good sleeper and we're getting sleep. So we're good.
Good. Well, listen, Commissioner Sonderling, thank you so much for being on the Candy Shop Talk podcast. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I appreciate everything that you shared with our audience today. And I look forward to meeting you in person someday in the future.
Absolutely. And again, you know, we need at the EEOC to be able to put out guidance, to be able to do helpful information for talent acquisition and HR professionals. We need to hear from you and, you know, everything you're doing at the talent board and putting out all your emails and your studies are really helpful for allowing federal government to see what's happening in real time, because sometimes we're in a bubble here in Washington, D.C. So I really appreciate all the work you're doing.
Well, I thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Candy Shop Talk podcast. For more information about Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards and benchmark research, visit www.thetalentboard.org.